Welcome back to this Tuesday's Across the Movie Aisle, presented by Bulwark Plus. I'm your host, Sonny Bunch, culture editor of The Bulwark, and I'm joined, as always, by the award-winning Alyssa Rosenberg of The Washington Post, Peter Suderman of Reason Magazine. Alyssa, Peter, how are you today?
I'm swell.
I'm so happy to be talking about movies with friends.
First up in controversies and non-controversies is the dread Phantom Menace of toxic fandoms. A new story in Variety highlights the myriad ways in which concerns over toxic fans have caused headaches for executives and actors alike, opening with an anecdote from the star of the now-canceled Disney Plus show The Acolyte, Amanda Stenberg, in which she says the show, quote, started experiencing a rampage of, I would say, hyper-conservative bigotry and vitriol, prejudiced hatred, and hateful language towards us. End quote. The suggestion from Variety that The Acolyte was, quote, the latest high-profile target of toxic fandom, end quote, is that this is why the show was canceled, rather than the more obvious and prosaic reason that views for the show were absolutely abysmal. A friend of the pod, the entertainment strategy guy, listed it as one of Disney Plus's biggest bombs of the year. It had accumulated far fewer hours watched than any of the other Star Wars shows on Disney Plus. It also cost an insane amount of money, somewhere between $180 and $230 million, depending on who you want to believe. That probably played some role in the decision to cancel it as well. But I'm starting with this because I think it's important to frame the conversation this way, right? Shows don't really get canceled because a handful of bigots send mean tweets or leave mean Instagram comments or make mean YouTube videos. I'm sorry, they don't. One of the shows highlighted in Variety's story is Bridgerton, which has received some nasty comments because of race swapping and historical, whatever. But you know why Netflix hasn't canceled it? Because it's an enormous hit. It's an enormous, enormous hit. That show makes tons of money. Lots of people watch it. They're not going to cancel it because of some jokers on the internet. All right, here's another anecdote from the story. An episode of House of the Dragon was review bombed after there was a lesbian kiss in the episode, right? And again, this is chalked up to toxic fandom. It's bigotry in the fan base, I guess. But what Variety fails to mention about that specific story, maybe because its parent company Penske Media has taken a lot of money from Saudi investors, is that this review bombing campaign was spearheaded by viewers in Saudi Arabia who were a little bit angsty about the portrayal of a same-sex kiss because that sort of thing is very frowned upon in Saudi Arabia. Is this really an issue of toxic fandom? Is it something else? I don't know. But that you'll also notice House of the Dragon's not getting canceled because it does very good numbers. Now, Variety reports that some studios have gathered focus groups of super fans to try and find ways to avoid antagonizing the toxic fan base. And this strikes me as dumb. It's dumb to do that. A show doesn't succeed or fail because of 5,000 angry morons on Reddit or Twitter or YouTube. But 5,000 angry morons on Reddit and YouTube and Twitter make a wonderful scapegoat for executives making six figures who need to explain to their corporate overlords why their latest expensive boondoggle like The Acolyte or Disney Plus's Echo or the biggest boondoggle of all, Amazon's Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, have underperformed. Oh, you can't blame us. You can't blame it. It's the racists and the sexists. It's the bad fans. You don't want to give up to them, do you? You don't want to punish us for the bad fans. Give me a break. Give me a break. This fear of coming across as even momentarily allied with these bad people, you know, capital B, capital P, bad people, has completely neutered industry reporting on what is working and what isn't working in streaming, right? Consider this Hollywood Reporter story from last week, headlined, Is Disney Bad at Star Wars? Now, the answer to this question is pretty clearly yes, right? They've had some big successes. Star Wars The Force Awakens, Rogue One, big hits. The Mandalorian, big hit. But lots and lots of failures, worsening TV ratings. Disney hasn't released a Star Wars movie in 5 years. And the last three movies they did release, The Last Jedi, Solo, and The Rise of Skywalker, were marked by messy storytelling and diminished financial returns, at least in part because the executive class over there has no idea what it's doing or what it wants. But you have to be very sensitive how you phrase this. You have to be very sensitive. Here's how the Hollywood Reporter put it when it comes to Lucasfilm head Kathleen Kennedy. Quote, any mention of Kennedy amid a look at the Star Wars track record cannot be separated from the fact that she has been the target of hateful and ugly fandom attacks. End quote. And I'm sorry, This is ridiculous. Be professional. Stop covering for incompetence in the executive suites and just report the stories out. If you can't tell, this sort of like totally blinkered scapegoating drives me bonkers. It really like ratchets up my annoyance level to about 27. Alyssa,
no,
let's agree.
You sound so calm.
Alyssa, let's agree. Let's agree that there's some number of quote unquote toxic fans, right? There are bad people out there. They use racial slurs. They say mean things to the actors. Nobody likes those people. Isn't the proper response to just like ignore them? Ignore the trolls. Stop giving them oxygen. And constantly talking about how much power they have over the product.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I mean, look, I have spent a lot of my life in fandoms in a way that I think is maybe a little bit more intense than the way either of you did. I don't think either of you like hand wrote Star Wars fan fiction to a pen pal at any point in your lives. I mean, you have various other obsessions and quirks, but none of you ever did anything like that, as far as I know. And so I have spent, you know, a lot of time kind of identified as a fan or sort of speaking to very intense fans of either, you know, Star Wars, the Game of Thrones books, etc. And yeah, look, there are always people in these communities who are, you know, bad fans, and I'm saying that in scare quotes, in a couple of different ways, right? I mean, there are bad fans who can't tolerate any change to sort of the race or gender or sexual orientation of a character for reasons of bigotry. Then there are people who can't tolerate any changes to the text at all because what they want is fundamentally stenography, right? Like they want to create their own version of the story that has existed in their head for decades and have it be sort of a private transcription service that they put on screen. And anything else is going to be sort of intolerable to them. There are bad fans because there are people who have just invested too much of their lives and personalities in these stories, and that has become sort of a substitute for having a personality. And I think it is a real problem for the entertainment industry that it both wants the business of the sort of diehard fans, the people who have put the most money, energy, and thus are likely to put the most money into these franchises, but that they don't have the guts to sort of manage that aspect of their inevitable audience while also building it for a larger one. And part of what is frustrating about reading these sorts of stories is that every single aspect of them can be true, but the causalities that are sort of asserted between all of those things can be utterly false in a way that sort of undercuts the seriousness of any single part of the conversation, right? Like, it's not a great thing if, you know, actors end up getting harassed in sort of racist and sexist terms for the crime of being in projects, right? I mean, that's just, it's not a super healthy dynamic, and the sort of parasocial demands that some fans place both on stars and on sort of entire properties is not great and not healthy. It's totally true that Disney has no idea what to do with Star Wars, and I will be sort of one of the first people on the barricades saying that. It's also probably true that some of the criticism and, you know, conversation directed at Kathleen Kennedy has been sexist. Like, all of these things can be bad and true, but they don't necessarily add up to the conversation that it's useful to have about any of these properties. I mean, the problem with the Star Wars movies and TV shows is not that, you know, there are female characters or black characters or whatever. It's that Kathleen Kennedy and her team don't appear to understand what makes Star Wars compelling. And that is why these properties are failing. And it would be more useful both to the sort of the discourse as a whole, but also to Disney in terms of getting this incredibly valuable property back on a more creatively and commercially healthy track, if we could have the conversations about the real problems, while also on a parallel track have what I do think is sort of a broadly needed cultural conversation about kind of an inherent contradiction between encouraging people to be incredibly financially, emotionally, psychologically invested in these properties while also saying, like, don't take them too seriously, right? I mean, this is sort of a cultural problem we've made for ourselves by turning everything over into franchises. I don't know. It's just very annoying.
Well, I do think that that's a big part of this, right? Is that the studios have cultivated these fandoms and tried to activate them and made their own little, you know, Star Wars armies or whatever to get out there and support the projects, hopefully. But I think you're totally right, right? Like there are issues here about people getting harassed off of social media, like the stories about the stars who either leave social media entirely or turn their accounts over to, you know, some handler at Lucasfilm or Amazon or whatever to make sure that they're not inundated by harassment. Obviously, that is a problem. That's bad. No, I don't think any reasonable person is like that. That's fine. We should. That's just part of doing business. At the same time, Peter, I do think that there is just some buck passing here. That is the thing I think that drives me the most cuckoo bananas out of all this is this idea in that the Hollywood Reporter story that you sent us that like, okay, well, you know, we have to make sure we always clear our throat and say, well, you know, Kathleen Kennedy is blah, blah. And I'm sorry, like you don't actually have to say that. You don't have to say that. What you talk about is what's on the screen and what's happening with the bottom line.
So I think there are basically two separate issues here that some folks are trying to conflate in order to escape some blame. And the first issue is that there are, in fact, as we've all said, some really awful, toxic, terrible fans out there. Racists, misogynists, you name it, all the ists, all the bad ones, they're all out there. They're all doing stuff online and it's terrible. And like, you don't condone it. You don't say it's any good. And it's also quite unpleasant to be a specific person who's on the receiving end of that sort of thing. If you are an actor, an actress, a filmmaker who is had your social media replies flooded with that sort of thing, of course it's unpleasant. I think we all either in some cases have had at least a little bit of this, or if not, we certainly know folks who have had, as journalists, who have had that sort of response to social media, should have had that sort of response on social media. It's awful. This is
fact check. Everybody on Twitter loves me. Nobody's ever been mean to me or said bad things about me because I'm a delight.
I'm going to submit that one to a secondary fact check because I think I've been mean to you on Twitter. No, it's out of love, only out of love.
I've been gently mocking to both of you on Twitter, but my Twitter behavior is unimpeachable.
I'm giving my Twitter over to Kathleen Kennedy because of that. I just can't handle it. But that's totally secondary from the question of, are these products any good? And the problem with Star Wars in particular is that far too much of what has been produced, and in particular the theatrical features, have been mediocre to outright bad. The Rise of Skywalker. Rise of Skywalker is a shockingly bad giant tentpole movie, right? Like, it's much worse actually than The Last Jedi, which is the movie they were trying to recover from. It's just a terrible, terrible movie. It's badly crafted, disorganized, and a complete mess. And that's not because of bad fans, although it is. You could say, oh, sure, there's some, you know, negative reaction to the second one, and they respond, but like, it's not the bad fans didn't make that movie. And if the filmmakers are going to blame bad fans, then what they've and say, well, we made this because the bad fans, the second, like, you guys chose to do that. The bad fans are not sitting there on set tapping the director's shoulder going, hey, a little more of this. Hey, this should make less sense here because, like, I don't know. Like,
nobody wanted to resurrect Emperor Palpatine. Nobody wants it.
It's just. That was a decision made by the executives and the creatives who made that movie, and the movie is terrible. And I think that's the clearest example, but a bunch of the other products that have come out of the Star Wars verse have also been just shockingly bad. And so in some cases, people complain that, oh, these things are woke, these are whatever, but like, the problem is they're bad. And the thing that I think everyone should be thinking about, that if they're trying to think, well, you know, is the problem that they're woke? Is the problem just that they're sort of crappily made? Go back actually to a movie that came out right in the middle of the sort of, or the early days of the sort of Disney Star Wars Renaissance, 2018, Into the Spider-Verse. Into the Spider-Verse is like a I don't know if I want to call it a woke movie, but it is explicitly a film about like diverse representation, about taking a character who has for a long time been a stand-in and an avatar for a particular kind of like white nerdy guy who's got feelings and struggles with the world, right? Like the almost exactly the kind of guy who you picture as like, this is the bad fan who, right? And people loved that movie. And that movie did super well, as did the sequel. And people loved that movie, and it did super well, as did the sequel, because it was great. It was just legitimately like objective. Like, if you loved Spider-Man, it's really hard not to love those two movies, because those movies have a deep understanding of what Spider-Man, like what makes Spider-Man great and enduring and popular. And they just delivered that, and they delivered it in a totally different way. That movie won an Oscar. I want to say for some sort of for best animated picture, maybe. That movie
won an Oscar. It was almost certainly for that.
When the folks came up to collect the Oscar, their speech was like basically just like, this movie is about diversity and representation. Like, it was just like they didn't pretend, you know, this is just about for love of comic book. They were like, no, like we're expanding into different types of audiences, different types of portrayals of all this. Like, it was just like a flat out like, diversity is great. We're going to do like, this is DEI Spider-Man. They didn't quite say DEI Spider-Man, but they basically said, this is DEI Spider-Man. And there was, I'm sure there's some idiot online who was mad. I'm certain that you can find a YouTube video or a comment somewhere.
But somebody no one cared.
But it didn't matter. It was totally
woke
irrelevant.
Spider-Man.
And guess what Sony is not out there doing? Blaming bad fans for their giant hit of a DEI Spider-Man movie, because it didn't matter, because it was a great Spider-Man movie. It's two of them, actually.
One thing I think some
Make
of these execs
get... is solves
no,
all
this
your
is,
problems.
And this is the thing. And I think some of these execs get a little bit frustrated because they're not getting enough credit for trying to do this with other properties. We're diversifying Star Wars. Why aren't we getting more kudos for this? And it's neither here nor there if the thing you make is bad. If the thing you make is not enjoyed by fans, and is not critically acclaimed, and if you make a bad thing, people aren't going to like it. I'm sorry. Like, that's just what happens. That's what happens when you make bad things. So you should make good things. If you make good things, that solves a lot of problems. Solves a lot. Making
I
you
don't
should
know,
press the button.
Sonny.
Press the button that is the good thing button. You press the good thing button, and then you're fine. And I don't understand what their problem is. Just press the good thing
button. This seems incredibly simplistic to me.
It is. It is simplistic. It is. I'm being very simplistic here, but it's a simple answer. It's a hard thing to do, but it's a simple answer. All right. So what do we think? Is it a controversy or a non-controversy that so-called toxic fans are getting way more credit than they deserve for the woes plaguing nerd media? Alyssa?
I mean, it's controversial. Like, this is all just a mess. And also, everyone should break their franchise addiction and go back to making normal movies about actual human beings. So, send the nerds back where they belong. And I include myself in that. Like, send us back into our mom's basement.
Put us back in our hole.
Yeah.
Peter.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we didn't have this, we definitely would have had Taxi Driver 2 by now. And that would be just a much better world. So, controversy.
It's a controversy, and this has been building for years and years and years. I remember when The Force Awakens came out, Disney put out they sent a preemptive letter out that was like, we know there's going to be complaints about having a black stormtrooper in this movie, and we just hope everybody goes see that. And nobody was complaining about that. Nobody was complaining about that. There was no black stormtrooper controversy until they started talking about it, and I really, like, whatever. It drives me crazy. Stop. Stop giving these people power over your properties. Just stop mentioning them. Leave them be. And they'll go away. Ignore them. And they'll go away. All right. Make sure to swing by Bulwark Plus on Friday for our bonus episode on legendarily awful sequels. Speaking of which, on to the main event. Joker, Folie à Deux. Am I close with the French there? I don't really know.
You gotta say it in the Pepe Le Pew voice.
Folie à Deux. Directed by Todd Phillips and starring Joaquin Phoenix as Arthur Fleck, aka the Joker, and Lady Gaga as Lee Quinzel, aka Harley Quinn. I want to preface my intro here by saying, for the record, that I am the only one on this show who actually liked the first one, which we reviewed in, I believe, our first episode. Is that right? Was that the first?
I believe that is correct.
Episode
I was thinking about
of
this.
Across the Movie Aisle that we taped.
I believe we went ahead and did, we might have done an Ad Astra test episode right before that.
That sounds right.
But I'm pretty sure the first episode that went out to the world was Joker.
Yeah. So we've covered this ground before, right? All right. So anyway, again, I thought the original worked. And I still think the original works because it really did capture something in the zeitgeist around 2019. Like, I don't think you can understand that movie without understanding how crazy everything and everyone was in 2019, right? After 3 years of Trump ratcheting up national tensions daily on Twitter, right? After marches by tiki torch wielding white supremacists on college campuses and then counterattacks by black masked Antifa all over the country. The rage of Me Too burning through Hollywood and taking out people who deserved it and some who didn't, and other industries just like clearing out the landscape. Like, people were mad. People were mad, and that anger was erupting in myriad ways all around the world. And that's why this movie didn't just make $1 billion worldwide. It also inspired protesters in Hong Kong and Lebanon to don Joker masks as part of anti-government protests. It was a real zeitgeist movie. Todd Phillips made a movie in which rioters inspired by the Joker killed Thomas Wayne, thus creating the Batman, right? And he did it in a way that you could code those rioters as either MAGA or Antifa. And it was honestly kind of a brilliant choice, right? There was an inchoate rage that was really just captured there. I think it worked. You guys don't. I know. That's fine. All right. Joker Folie à Deux, there's going to be some spoiler talk here in this episode. I don't think anybody's going to go see this movie, judging by the box office. We can maybe talk about that a bit.
This movie is impossible to spoil because nothing happens.
There's some, we're going to talk about what happens in this film. Anyway, makes a number of choices. All of the choices are bad. Every choice in this movie is just head-scratchingly bad. The biggest, of course, is that this is, for some reason, a musical. Phoenix and Gaga frequently break into song. Sometimes in the setting where the action is actually taking place. Sometimes it's in Fleck's head, visions, dancing on fancier sets. The musical numbers are sung poorly when Phoenix is singing. He can't sing, guys. I'm sorry. Lady Gaga, she can sing. She's a good singer. She sings well. Joaquin Phoenix does not sing well. Regardless of who is singing, they're staged totally indifferently. I don't understand how you can spend $200 million on a musical and have it come out as boring as this movie is. The camera constantly locked down. There's no movement. The sets are boring and dull and gray. And even the sets that are dressed up to look like interesting and well lit aren't. It's a series of bizarre, dull choices. Boredom is the order of the day in this movie, however. So maybe it makes some internal logical sense. The first hour or so takes place mostly in Arkham Asylum. It is a slog. It is a slog of a movie. We see Arthur Fleck's day-to-day life, his taunting by the guards, the meaninglessness of his life, how he sparks a bit when he encounters Lee. Finally, a girl who likes him. Incel no longer. But she doesn't really like him. She likes the Joker. She's a rich girl pretending to have a mental illness because it makes her interesting. If I wanted to make a case for this film's relevance, I'd argue that she represents something like Tumblr culture. But even then, other movies like Bodies, Bodies, Bodies have done it way, way better. The action then shifts from a boring prison drama to a boring courtroom drama. And I will give the film the tiniest amount of credit here for almost sparking to life during the 10-minute sequence in which Arthur Fleck adopts kind of a foghorn leghorn. Oh, I'm just a small Southern attorney here to argue my case. That cracked me up a little bit just because it was so half-assed and dumb. But we see like the notes that he's taking on his notepad. Like one of the questions he wants to ask one of his witnesses, Gary Puddles, who was the dwarf from the first film. He wants to ask him, how tall are you? Like that actually, like that, it cracked me up a little bit just because, again, it's so dumb and like so clearly what a mentally ill scattered person would be thinking and taking notes about. But the point is not to amuse us via the Joker's antics. It is to remind us repeatedly that the Joker was a bad guy and he did bad things and he's mentally ill. He's not to be emulated and he's lonely and he's sad. You gotta remember all these things. Okay, they succeeded in doing that, I guess. It's certainly not pleasant to watch, particularly over the last 10 to 15 minutes or so, during which, again, spoilers, the Joker is beaten and, like, I think gang raped by the prison guards. Is that what was happening in that sequence?
It's definitely a sexual assault of some sort.
Sexual assault is heavily implied.
Very strongly implied. I don't think you can read that as anything other than a brutal sexual assault. The particulars are left to your imagination.
Yeah, which then that leads him to renounce being the Joker, which leads to his girlfriend leaving him, which leads to him getting stabbed by a fellow inmate and dying on screen.
So is the message of this movie that corrective prison rape is good?
You said it, not me. There's kind of a lot going on there, all of it bad and dumb. Peter, did Joker Fale Adu work for you on any level, on any possible conceivable cinematic level?
It's not just that it's a bad movie, it's that it makes the first movie look worse in retrospect. So I didn't like the first movie, but I thought there were some things that worked well enough about it. It had some really striking compositions. I think it was, in its own way, it was pretty focused. It had a kind of verve to it. I thought it was an ugly in spirit and unpleasant movie, and not really a particularly good one, but there was something about it that sort of, I agree, captured some of the spirit of the times. And so I was negative, but it was a kind of mixed negative with some things that I respect. But this movie, this entire movie is just there to beat you over the head with, you didn't understand my first movie. And so this whole freaking film is structured essentially as a series of recaps of the first movie. Nothing happens in Joker Fale Adu, except that the Joker goes to a bunch of different people. First his lawyer, then some of the prison guards, then a journalist, then a court, and he goes over all the stuff he did in the first movie, and they all agree, it's really pretty, it's pretty ugly and pretty bad. Did you get that? Did you understand it? This is a spite movie. It's a spite movie made out of hatred for the fans who liked the first one. And because it is a spite movie that is made out of hatred for those fans, it shows you that the first one also was made to throw all of this in the face of the fans, the people who liked it. And in that way, it's not just a bad movie. It's not just a boring movie. It's not just mean-spirited and also kind of empty and crappy, and not, it doesn't even have the nice compositions or the electricity of the first one. This movie also goes back and reminds you, it is there to say, hey, you people who spent $1 billion on my movie, you got it wrong and I hate you. Well, guess what? It really looks like from the box office, the fans hate them back. Like that's the one, everybody got what they deserved with this, which is that we all can now see the first one was obviously terrible. The second one is just a foot stamping, angry toddler's insistence that everybody who liked the first one is awful. And the fans are reacting, I think, appropriately here.
See, I disagree with this slightly. I agree that fans of the first are not going to like this one.
I quite clearly don't.
They quite clearly
don't.
The
cinema score, I think you posted, it's like the first comic book movie ever to get a D.
Yeah, the worst score ever for a comic book movie, which is an achievement in its own right, I guess. I disagree with this slightly. I've seen it phrased this way several times, that the movie is an attack on the fans of the original, and I totally understand this argument. I don't think it's wrong precisely, but I do think there's an argument to be made that it's a doubling down on the first one, which was intentionally pretty unpleasant. And like, you aren't necessarily supposed to like anyone, including Arthur Fleck himself, in the film. It is very much a movie that is designed to like kind of be able to kind of rub people's faces in the ugliness of it. And it feels like a doubling down on that first movie's kind of like mean-spirited impulse. So in a way, I think it's almost like, all right, we're going to give the fans more of what they want. Except I also do kind of agree that it is designed specifically to anger and annoy those people. I don't know. It's I just find it hard to believe that anybody would spend $200 million on a movie that's like, you like the first one? Fuck you. Here's what you get. I don't know. Alyssa, what did you make of
Joker? I would find it hard to believe had I not seen this movie. But in fact, I have seen this movie, and it really seems like they spent $200 million to say, hey, fans, we hate you.
It's not impossible. All right, Alyssa, what did you make of Joker, Fale Adu?
I think I hated the first of the three of us, I think I am the one who hated the first movie most. Does that sound accurate?
Probably.
I think probably.
That's probably correct.
And I am actually very slightly surprising myself by saying that I think it's possible that I was the person who found something to like in this one, which is Lady Gaga's performance. Sunny is making interesting faces at me right now, but she's playing the character who I wouldn't say she necessarily grows the most over the course of the movie, but sort of about whom the most is revealed. She's the only character in some ways who takes action in the movie. And part of the problem with the movie is that that she's a supporting character, not the main one, right? Because an interesting version of this movie is the one that's not about Arthur Fleck, but about how Gotham has responded to him, right? And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there is footage that is in the trailers for this movie repeatedly that is not in the movie itself.
There's lots of footage in the trailer that's not in this movie.
A scene of the two of them on the steps outside the courthouse
dancing, may not
have been sort of imagined. I think there's a scene, again, in the trailer of Arthur, attacking the judge in the courtroom. There's a bunch of stuff in the trailer that's not going on. But what is interesting, what would have potentially been interesting about this movie and would have been a more interesting way to get at the response to the first one is to have it be a movie about how Gotham has responded to Arthur Fleck with Lee Quinzel or Harley Quinn sort of as the character who embodies that, right? Because, the movie is sort of, kind of gesturing at that around the edges of the movie and including in its final scene in which, someone who is presumably the person who carries on the mantle of Joker murders Arthur Fleck and then cuts up his own face. But the movie is weirdly airless, right? I mean, to the extent that we see what's happening outside of Arkham or the courtroom, it's from these, very sort of abbreviated shots of the crowd on the steps and then sort of the scene after the courtroom is bombed and Arthur makes this very brief escape. But we don't have a sense, and it's, again, much more airless than it was in the first movie. We don't have a sense of what's going on with Gotham economically, socially. We don't have a strong sense of Gotham's media culture. We just don't understand the world that would embrace Arthur Fleck. And in that movie, a movie where Lee Quinzel is actually the star, would have been a much more interesting movie because Gaga plays a really unsettling role, right? I mean, when you meet her, it seems like maybe she's crazy. And by the end of the movie, it's clear that she's crazy in an entirely different way, right? I mean, she is not someone who is herself sort of vulnerably mentally ill. She is kind of a true psychopath who thought that maybe she had found someone who had managed to kind of express that on a grand stage and then is heartbroken when Arthur Fleck turns out to be merely incredibly damaged instead of the kind of force of decadent, violent chaos that she has been looking for. Do you disagree with that, Son?
I think her character is even simpler than that. She thought she found somebody who would bring her attention and fame of a certain sort that I think she thinks she deserved. Attention is the thing specifically that she's looking for. My issue with Gaga's performance is that she's a better singer. She's a much, much better singer than Joaquin Phoenix. So it unbalances all the singing scenes when she's singing and he's singing. It's what am I watching? But he is also a much better actor than she is. I know folks are very into her performance in A Star Is Born, and I know some folks who have said she's very good here. I still think that she's fine. She's serviceable, but she's a very good singer who can also act enough. And when in the scenes where they're together and acting, I it's unbalanced. It's he is doing a different, he's on just a different level than she is. And that doesn't work for me. No, but I totally agree with you that a movie, literally anything, any movie that does not take place 90% of it inside the walls of Arkham or the walls of that courtroom would be a much better movie. It's just stultifying. It is
completely airless in a way that you get the contempt, but not the sort of the commentary. You get sort of the punchline, but not the argument. And if what Todd Phillips wants to do is make an argument that a society that would embrace the Joker is sick, you have to introduce us to the society. And he just has no interest in that. And this movie feels endless. It feels 10 million years long. And yet absolutely nothing happens, right? Like,
so one thing happens, right? And yeah, there's really one event, maybe two. There's the introduction of Harley Quinn, and then there's the bomb in the courtroom. And both of those things should have happened in the first 30 minutes of the movie. The inciting incident 10 minutes in or 12 minutes in or maybe just five should have been the introduction of Harley Quinn. Hey, here she is. They're going to have a thing together. It's going to be crazy. And then 25 or 30 minutes in at the act break, the bomb goes off and then they're off on their adventures together. And that this whole movie should have been essentially the first act. Most of the movie should have been cut out. All of the kind of prison abuse stuff, most of the courtroom, etc. But like, give us this. I don't even care if the first 25 minutes of a movie are kind of a recap that reframes what the first film was about. But then let these characters out and let them be Joker and Harley Quinn. You can make a movie about how they're bad and how they're a sickness and how even frankly the fans misunderstood the awfulness and the evil of these characters. But give them something to do.
And you can have a sort of slow unraveling of the relationship as they each realize sort of who the other one really is, right? You know, but you can show that through action rather than through Arthur Fleck like inexplicably confessing to murdering his mother in a courtroom and being like, I'm not really this person, right? Like, it is just the most sad sack movie possible. It's awful.
Yeah. And your point that we don't get any sense of Gotham itself is 100% what is missing from this movie compared to the first. Like, the first one, you get a sense of things in Gotham are bad. Like, things are bad all around. There's violence on the streets. There are jerk stockbrokers wandering around, you know, harassing people on subways, like whatever. The whole city is a boiling pot ready to, you know, spill over and whatever. But like, again, when you take all of the action and you stick it within the walls of a prison, a gray prison and a kind of brownish white courtroom, and you shoot it in IMAX for some reason, why is all this happening? That's what I just found myself thinking over and over again. Why are we watching this? Why on earth would I care about any of this?
Because Todd Phillips hates you and he wants you to know it. You didn't get that the first time around. So let's go over it again.
I guess maybe that's true. All right. Now I have become the Joker. I am the one who was telling the joke.
No, Sonny, you were always the Joker.
I was always the Joker. All right. So what do we think? Thumbs up or thumbs down on Joker? Fale adieu. Alyssa.
A thumbs down.
Peter.
Thumbs down. It's not the worst movie I've seen this year because I've seen Madame Web, but it is the most unpleasant movie that I've had to watch this year.
Thumbs down. And it is by far the worst movie I've seen this year. Even with Madame Web and... I guess Morbius was the year before. I don't know. It's bad. It's bad on every level. It's just awful. And somebody needs to lose their job over this movie. We'll see. We'll see what happens. All right. That's it for today's show. Many thanks to our producer, Sebastian Hughes, without whom this program would sound much worse. Make sure to swing by Bulwark Plus on Friday for our bonus episode. Tell your friends. A strong recommendation from a friend is basically the only way to grow podcast audiences. If we don't grow, we will die. If you did not love today's episode, if you're one of those bad fans out there, complain to me on Twitter at SonnyBunch. I'll convince you that this is, in fact, the best show in your podcast feed. See you guys on Friday.